there's just going to be this moment in history where it just strikes.
Yeah.
It could be when you're 60, it could be when you're 14.
Hey, you're listening to the Creative Pep Talk Podcast. This show is about thriving as a creative person. I'm your host, Andy J. Pizza. You can stay up to date with Creative Pep Talk and my creative work by following me on Instagram at Andy J. Pizza. Let's jump in to today's episode. This episode is sponsored by AstroPad. AstroPad is an app that turns your iPad into a professional graphics tablet for your Mac. It works with any Mac app, so you can use creative tools like Photoshop and Illustrator right on your iPad. Check out AstroPad.com to learn more. This episode is also sponsored by 2020, where creatives get authentic stock photos. Sick of stock photos that suck? 2020 has crowdsourced millions of real-world photos available under a simple royalty-free license. Go to 2020.com/CPT to start your 5-photo free trial. That's the word 20, then 20.com/CPT to get 5 free photos that don't suck. Okay, so today on the show, I have an extremely special guest. I've been wanting to do an interview with this chap for quite some time. We have none other than lettering legend, Eric Marinovich. This guy is one of my all-time favorite people. I met him a few years ago, and I always kind of think of him as the Michael Jordan of lettering. This guy can do it all. He calligraphy, brush strokes, vectors, just gorgeous, gorgeous stuff. He can make letters in snow. This guy's got it all. And, you know, when I met him, I was kind of prepared to meet Michael Jordan, which is an intimidating vibe. And then we go hang out. This is in San Francisco where he's based. And it's like meeting Michael Jordan and finding out that he's really Mother Teresa. That's what it was like to meet Eric, because this guy is the sweetest guy. He's so kind. He's so people-oriented. And I just felt like he schooled me not only in creativity, but in how to just be a good person. And man, he honestly has been a massive inspiration to me for a long time in terms of art. But then since I met him, I've just been inspired by the way that he deals with people. And, you know, it really had a big impact on me. So when I heard he was going to be in Indianapolis, I knew that I had to drive over and interview him in person. And we also have sidekicks today. Bob Ewing, lettering artist in Indianapolis, big friend of mine. Love Bobby, such a good dude, who chimes in a little bit. And then also we have Sean Togetsky, who's a lettering artist from Michigan. And I think he chimes in a few times as well. It was great hanging out with these guys. We had a blast. And I know that you are going to learn so much from Eric, and you're going to just be super inspired by his story. So get ready for that. Real quick, just want to say a big shout out and thanks to ThangMFG.co. Those are the folks behind These Are Things. They started a new little company to help people create pens and patches. If you've wanted to make pens and patches, but you've been overwhelmed to do that, go check them out. They will help you get your pins and patch designs made in the flesh. They did that for me. If you have pen and patch designs in mind, but you've been overwhelmed by getting them manufactured, go to thangmfg.co and go get some made. They'll make it super easy and they come out fantastic. So go check them out. Okay, here it is, my interview with none other than lettering legend Eric Marinovich. Be aware this episode contains some language. So, Eric, what I realized is that I know you as an artist, but not so much as a person. That's cool. You don't have to go all the way back to womb times, but
cool.
I'd love to know, like, high school, college, how you got to where you are now.
Oh, nice.
Straight in.
Maybe that is a common thread among creatives, but I really wasn't talented at anything other than, I remember in seventh grade, I'll start at seventh grade, in health class, for some reason, there is the teacher had prompted on, like, career day, what do you want to do? And there was this booklet that literally listed every single job in the universe and what the salary was at that time and place. I won't name years because it's too long ago. But in it, I wanted to be a comic book artist. I soaked that up. I spent all of my hard-earned allowance money on comic books. I was like Marvel, and then Image came in, and I was all about Spawn. I was like Spawn, but Marvel, then Image for a while. But I remember looking at like what the salary of a comic book artist was, and it was listed at $17,000. And at that nimble age,
and the book.
Yeah, but at the nimble age of 17,000. No, let's say I was 13.
Yeah,
that I just had the foresight to like, that is, wow, that is terrible money. Fast forward 20 years, and I wasn't even close to making that. Dude. So, but I didn't let go of that path because I knew I wanted to be creative, and really that was a most, it just felt natural, and I could waste hours and not really consider the time I was wasting. Like the sun would be rising, I was like, oh, cool, it's sunny outside again.
What were you doing? Were you
just drawing,
like copying stuff out of
comics? Drawing Wolverine, drawing whatever I could, and I have like books of it at my parents' place still.
Yeah,
but that was kind of the starting point. And then also I was always encouraged. I had like decent teachers through junior high and high school. And
did you ever make up your own X-Men?
Oh yeah. Well, I came up with my own comic.
Yeah.
And I think it was like the Genesis came out, and there was like Streets of Rage.
Yeah.
So I switched the words around and called Rage in the Streets. It exists. Dude, I need to find it. I'm sure it's.
We need it for the show notes.
Okay. Yeah.
That's so good.
I think I maybe made it into like page 5 of the comic. Right. But it was,
that's pretty good.
I didn't have a chance to ink it, you know. I was just focused on my pencil skills.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't have there's some like famous Mark something. I'm forgetting his name. He's a famous like Marvel comic ink artist. Anyways, so then kind of fast forward through college, I went to San Luis Obispo, Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, which is a state school, but it's really known for like its ag department and its like astrophysics engineering department. What? Those two, I know, the fact that those two exist on the same campus.
Are you from California?
Originally from California, from Northern California. So I went to a small liberal arts school, and literally I think we were so insignificant in the grand scheme of that university that like we had to share the building with like ROTC and then like city development planning. We had like 3 rooms dedicated to the program.
Oh my gosh.
And the teachers were good, but I was fortunate that I had like 3 classmates that I just connected with at a level that we could understand that there was something else out there, and we really kind of pushed each other. So my great friend Keith, he was into music, more of fine art. So he was like, hey, have you ever heard of the Pixies? And this is kind of crazy that I didn't know of them by the time I was in college.
Yeah.
But I was like, what is this? He's like, have you ever heard of Deltron? I'm like, no. And then you start realizing like,
Deltron 3030?
Yeah.
Oh, I know every word.
I know.
Dude, it's so good.
Oh, I know not all the lyrics, but I'm happy that you know all the lyrics. I wish I had that skill.
Dude, I love that album. It's good.
So of course, you know, being exposed by peers that know more than you, and then the willingness for you to accept that there are just things outside of the things that you thought you liked and that you thought were really good.
Yeah.
That you have these people who have better interests and are like more nerdy than you.
Yeah.
Just raises the nerd bar on like, okay, maybe what have I been listening to?
Yeah.
Should I reinvestigate these comics? Should I go into like reading graphic novels? You know?
Up in your game? Yeah, that's hilarious. Yeah.
How have I not matured?
I do think like leveling up your taste requires humbling yourself. Like, these people know more than me.
Yeah.
And I don't understand this, but I'm going to try it.
Yeah. But then being with those peers that don't belittle you for not knowing, mm-hmm. they're just like, oh, cool. Well, here, I'll bring in like the CD tomorrow, or I'll bring in my favorite book, or, you know, just that sharingness. that's something that I wasn't really surrounded with until, like, you know, I met Keith, and then that carried on to when I moved to New York, worked with another caliber of creatives and graphic
design. Why did you move to New York?
There was just a time, like, the I feel like it was before the big recession, and the economy was really slow, and I just couldn't find work.
Right.
So I actually apprenticed under my dad, who at the time he had his own bricklaying business. Mm-hmm. So I was considering taking apprenticing to take over his business. And then teachers that I had in community college were like, hey, we need like an assistant, because they had a gallery space and a graphic design process.
Yeah.
So they're like, we can't pay you, but you can come and hang out. So what I ended up doing is just painting the walls over between exhibits.
Yeah.
But in that time, I got to meet David Cho, AJ Fossick, like all these really predominantly kind of, I hate saying street artists because they're of a caliber of fine art.
Yeah.
And just being surrounded by them, seeing how they acted, just seeing their character, their personality, and especially being exposed to them while they're hanging their work and the way that they would talk about it, just like, again, set another bar where I was just like, wow, there's these people who are doing these things that they love and they just are doing it, you know? Mm. I think they put maybe certain responsibilities aside just to be able to have the bandwidth to make this thing that makes them happy.
Yeah.
And then that was the pivotal point where I had the conversation with my dad. I was just like, I don't want to do work with you anymore. He's like, God, I was waiting for you to say that. So
how long were you working with him?
For like a year.
Right.
Yeah. Long enough to hate it every day.
Yeah. You had a similar kind of like, you were in like the labor. What were you doing? Sorry to cut you off, but Bob.
No.
What were you doing?
I did commercial electric work for a concrete or a cement company.
Yeah.
Which is filthy, disgusting.
You were doing the hate it every day.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, then like our busiest time was in the winter, and like, doing electrical work where you're working with tiny wires in the winter, you can't wear gloves. So it was pretty much miserable. So like, you know, you often like think about like, okay, I'm having a bad day, and it's like, whoa, like pretty fortunate to do.
Gives this you a humility
thing.
Gratefulness of what you're doing now.
For
gratitude
sure.
Is a better
that
word
like
than
perspective
gratefulness.
Is,
I don't know,
is
gratefulness
huge.
Is a word.
I learned the best thing ever from an electrician that was on a job site that I was working on with my dad. And he says, if there's a wire that you think is live, you hit it with the back of your hand, not this hand, because your muscles contract that if you touch it with an open hand, you'll basically like and not
squeeze
be able to
it.
Let go of
it
and potentially could kill yourself.
Yeah, you know what I learned on electrician job?
These are good.
It's,
I didn't know these tips were gonna come
is
out.
Never believe someone when they say that the power's turned off, that you always, it's always live unless you actually turn it off yourself. So,
because
I've been electrocuted. It's not fun.
Dude.
Yeah.
You learn something new every day.
That's why you're so. That's why you're so unique, man.
Yeah. I'm electric.
I was gonna ask what was wrong with you.
Yeah,
lots of things.
Yeah, and I think people that start in those places, those more humble, having the experience of a job that you really truly hate or is super challenging, definitely gives you gratitude and drive the rest of your career. I think I meet a lot of people that come from art school straight into a cushy design job that's maybe not super fun but is still design, and then they work out of that and they're just you don't have that gratitude of like, well, I could be
being
electrocuted
right even now. Like in design, even if you like graduated and you came straight out and got a design career right away, like I feel like it's important to start at the bottom and work your way up. Like there's no reason to have a sense of entitlement when you graduate, and you see that sometimes with people, and it's unfortunate, but
there's some people that are just really talented from
the
get-go.
No. Totally.
Yeah.
There's no judgment, but I think for me, I have a gratitude and a drive from having crappy jobs early on. And
for sure.
Yeah. Some people are just amazing. I'm not, but some people are, and and good for them.
Well, and like a lot of my drive comes from like a similar thing where like my dad drove a cement mixer for 36 years, and I saw kind of the struggles that he kind of had, or like that he didn't really enjoy doing that, but he did it because that's what paid the bills and it, you know, took care of all of us, and like not, you know, your parents wanting you to have a better life than what they did, and then, you know, that kind of rolling downhill.
So there was no work. You were working for your dad.
Working for my dad, but then my lovely girlfriend, now wife, and we had been doing a long distance relationship, and she had this epiphany where she made a decision, and she's like, "I'm selling all my stuff. I'm moving to New York."
Dude, what was the epiphany? Sorry.
The epiphany was, she was like, you know, also we met in school.
Yeah.
She was studying graphic design, and she found herself working as like a studio manager for a photographer.
Right.
And I think it was just this moment, and it was similar to what I was having, but in a different location in California, of like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
You know, this isn't like, do I see myself doing this for 5 years? So I remember getting this phone call. I'm like, "Eric, I'm selling everything I own at a garage sale this weekend, and I'm going to New York.
What?
And if you want to come with me, I recommend you do the same."
That's serious.
Balls.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So not balls.
Not balls. Ovaries.
Ovaries.
The equivalent.
Yeah, that's all right. No, that works.
Yeah.
Because women are way more tough than.
That's absolutely true.
100%.
I've been thinking a lot about how men are just jackasses. Like, I think about all the men I've ever known and how much they just complain and just don't get on with just the regular stuff.
Because we have this like something to prove, because we know like women are just way more awesome and
naturally just more.
Yeah. And that we just have something to prove, so that we just power through and just kind of push through our agenda on everything, when they're like just sitting back and like, just wait, we'll have our turn. Yeah. You guys mess everything
Come
up.
Come on, and keep trying.
Yeah. You have fun with this part of the chapter in history. So I did the same. I made the most money selling all my records, which now I regret, because there's a lot of them that were awesome that I don't have.
Yeah.
But I then fast forward a couple months later, and we were on a flight to New York and had 3 months in savings to hopefully get us through.
Did
to
you
find
have any prospects
job.
Or anything?
Nothing.
Right. That's good. Awesome.
Just high spirits.
Yeah.
And what was cool on the inaugural flight out there, MC Hammer was on the flight, and it was JetBlue.
What?
So he was flying like coach with the rest of us. So I was like, man, if MC Hammer is flying JetBlue, this is a good sign.
Dude, that is crazy.
Maybe not, but
Maybe not.
So we landed, and we just figured it out. But I'm a very late bloomer, and I think I have a lot of gratitude by surrounding myself with people who are way more talented with me, that have the patience and honestly, patience to just see other people's drive and nurture it.
Mm.
My wife is that way. All of my friends that I worked with first in New York, that I then started this blog with, Friends of Type, Aaron Karambula, Jason Wong, and Dennis Pyongyang. Those guys are just such phenomenal people, and I wouldn't be in this place for all of those moments in which they were like, "What are you doing? Like, you can do this more," and sitting with me. And if there was moments where I'm like, "I don't know how to write a bio and I'm so insecure about my writing abilities," they're like, "Do it and then we'll work it out."
Mm.
You know, sometimes you just need to have someone on your side rooting for you. And I do understand that not everyone has that, because maybe there's that ability and shyness not to reach out to somebody, but there's someone always willing to help.
Yeah.
And there's always someone better in certain areas of life than you.
Yeah.
But you have to be wise enough to just understand where they are better at and reach out for help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so lucky enough, I always had these moments where I probably get so frustrated and I'm just like, I need help.
Yeah.
So
does that still happen?
Oh yeah, very much so.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah, all the time.
What kind of things do you, not to skip ahead, but what are things about running an art business that are still kind of a struggle or frustration?
I think now you get at a point where you are fortunate enough to get hired to do the work that you had always dreamed about.
Yeah.
Because you put in the time to get yourself there, and there was a part of you deep down inside that wanted that, so that was a fire that propelled you. And somehow, this sounds hippity-dippity, but the universe has its way of just, as long as you have this yearning for it, somehow it'll figure itself out. If it's 5 months from now, if it's 10 years from now. So for
Did you always have drive? Like, is that always?
Yeah, but a very quiet one.
Right.
You know, I was always competitive, but I was always the most uncoordinated. I was wanted to be a star basketball
player.
Dude,
I'm the exact same in that. If I do personality tests, my competition is off the chain, but I never thought of myself as competitive because I can't shoot a basketball.
Yeah.
So if you're really competitive, you won't play games that you suck at.
Exactly.
Because you're like,
because you don't want to set yourself up for fail. Yeah, exactly. But the only way you get better is if you actually like commit to doing it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, totally true.
So that's like the double-edged sword of being a creative is that, you know, you start putting pencil to paper and you have this thing in your mind, but your hand isn't executing that idea.
Yeah. Terrible. Yes.
And then that's like the quick reality of like, okay, I really need to work at this. So
this is the whole idea of like hourglass and the creative gap.
Yeah.
Like you have good taste and you see like the work, you appreciate good work and you see the work that you want to make, but you can't, you're not making that
and
work.
And you're stuck and frustrated because you know the work you're making, that same taste leads you to know that the work you're making sucks.
Yeah. But to your question of like where there's moments where like you have to reach out for help is like, I'll have these like ideas that come into my head where it's just like, okay, I want to make this piece, but I know that there needs to be motion associated with it. I don't know how to do any motion.
Mm-hmm.
So I will then reach out, either it's like Twitter or my close connection of friends and just saying like, hey, do you know of anyone that could potentially help? And I was giving this talk last year at TIPO Berlin, and I knew that I needed to have this 1 minute animation that set the precedent, was like, it was my hype man before I went on stage.
That's good. I like that.
To get everybody excited because my slot was after lunch and I just knew people are going to be like food coma. Yeah. So I needed to have something loud and I needed to have some black and white flashy seizure-esque transitions.
Yeah.
So,
very perceptive.
A friend connected me to Alan Lester, who's based out of Nashville, and I was just like, Alan, I have this idea, I've storyboarded it all out, I love your work, can I hire you to do this, and can we collaborate together on it? And he's like, yeah, man, let's do this.
Yeah.
And like, helped me through it, and was a great partner in it, learned a lot from him of like what not to do next time, of like certain things that might be complicated to do in a 2 month period for a 1 minute animation. But understanding that, you know, you can only be as good as the people you surround yourself by, and being willingness and open to work with other talented peers and colleagues. And like, I fully paid him. I'm like, this is my budget, what can we do with this budget? Because I understood his time is valuable. Yeah. So I wasn't just going to try and like, hey, I'm going to do this thing, can you do it for free? Because that's totally messed up. That's bad practice. Yeah. And I wouldn't want someone to do that with me. And it happened. And it was just like, it was this great thing. And like, okay, now it's like I do murals and I understand if someone's going to hire me, I can't be in their space with highly toxic fumes for 3 weeks. Uh-huh. So I probably should reach out to either a sign painter or just get a hired hand to like get in there, install it, and be out in 2 days. But I have this pride. It's getting rid of the pride, right? Like, no, I can do this all myself. But it's just like, you at some point, the only way you're going to grow is by accepting the fact that you don't know these things that you, these new assignments that you're tasking yourself with, that can only be achieved by actually getting help and recognizing those people that help you and giving them credit. I feel like there are people out there that just hire people but then don't give them credit, and I think that's totally messed up, because this is a communal thing. We're all like striving to keep the lights on and saving up to buy a house or whatever, or feed your kids, that like, you know, pay credit where credit's due. So
I don't think we need flying cars. I feel like that would be hard to regulate. There'd be a lot of dangerous things happening, but we do need to be able to draw on computers. If you want to draw on your computer, go check out AstroPad at astropad.com. It turns your iPad into a graphics tablet for your Mac, so you can get up to the space age and use an AstroPad and draw on the computer like I do to make all my illustration work. Go check it out at astropad.com. Don't you love those photos of you and your buddies just fake, casually posing in an awkward position around a couch drinking coffee? Those photos are the best and they look great in creative work. That is not the kind of photos that you want in your creative work. If you want photos that look real and natural, go to 2020.com/CPT to get your 5 free photos. That's the word 20, the number 20.com/CPT to get 5 photos that don't suck for your creative work. Thanks, 2020. So do you find that relationships are a big deal for your career? I mean,
yeah.
When I went to San Francisco, I was really struck by how relational you are. Just not even just with artists, but with restaurant owners and just every person that you met. I feel like you have a deeper focus and appreciation for relationships than probably any artist that I've ever met. I just feel like it's a natural, innate thing where you seem to really appreciate the different relationships that you have, and they seem to play out in all kinds of different interesting ways in your career. Is that something that is just natural for you?
I think I've always been, I gravitate towards people who have talent and are passionate in areas outside of the thing that I'm doing.
Right.
So in my mile and a half walk to work every day, I pass by a bunch of restaurants, I pass by a coffee shop, and these are just things that I adapted into my life. So there's a sushi restaurant that I would go to.
We went to coffee.
Yeah.
We had a relationship with this guy.
Yeah.
We went to his,
oyster
place.
And I was just like, you go into these places and you could like sniff out the fact that they love that they were doing.
Yeah.
And then that is the connection. And it's not necessarily I go in like, hey, I'm a graphic designer. Like, you love what you're doing. I love what I'm doing. It was just like, if this person's passionate about this one thing, they're probably passionate about a lot of other things. This gets back to my friends like Keith, and then even my buddies in New York, Jason, Aaron, and Dennis. Is like, they were just nerdier in areas that you weren't into, but because of their gravitational pull and how excited they are about those things, they became something that you became interested in. So I started learning more about like fish and the preparation of fish and like what made this sushi restaurant that was... And as this first location, it was like maybe 20 seats. You were there, like 25 seats, but people just wanted to be there.
Where we had the oysters.
Yeah. And so I love that. And then the coffee shop too is just like Grand Coffee and the Mission. It was this like four seats, and I just wasn't. I remember the first time I went there, I was so intimidated, but I could like sense the fact that everyone in there was local, but they weren't like these new transplant.
Yeah.
That were coming in to either work in the tech field or whatever thing is popular in the industry in San Francisco, as there are many. And there was like this guy, Tai Wei, who's born and raised, not born and raised, he was born in Taiwan, but moved to the Mission when he was 8 years old.
Right.
And he had like all these crazy stories. So like, I just kind of persisted and then ended up like being able to like, okay, if I get there at 9:01, I know I'll get this right stool. And I just kind of like cemented myself there. And then lo and behold, I just found out like, man, community is everything.
Oh, yeah.
Because there is the community that you have online, but then I think the one that you can build these great relationships that kind of like add value to your life are the ones that are these personal connections. So it's those day-to-day interactions that actually kind of like slightly influence the work that I'm into, because maybe there's a topic that came up in the coffee shop that would then influence a lettering piece that I was doing later in the day. Or there was a musician that someone's like, hey, have you ever heard of this like punk band in Mexico right now? I'm like, oh, listen to that. I'm like, wow, look at their work. See kind of what visuals they are attributing their music to, and then get inspired by that. You know, everything is, there's these like, these, you just have to like keep pursuing, but then there's these new avenues that people will like open doors for you, and then you're like, whoa, what, this is amazing.
Yeah.
But because of those people that are in these industries outside of design, that I'm grateful for those relationships, because they really do introduce me to like some wonderful things that I would have never have time to, because we don't have a lot of time in our days, right?
Yeah.
Like chasing kids around, making podcasts, doing 10 things at work, time to do workshop sessions.
And I think one thing that, so I'm naturally a workaholic, I'm so grateful that I have a family, because I feel like this isn't a bragging thing. This is a problem. It's a real problem. Like I would work every hour I'm awake and weekends and just do, cause I'm so interested in, and I've gotten so nerdy in this little particular area that, you know, I find that, you know, some people will get into lettering, let's say, and they get so deep into lettering that their lettering is about lettering and for letterers, right? I'm so inspired by your interest in everything, because it's my nature to be like, I'm into illustration, and I'm going to do a podcast about illustration, and I'm going to talk about illustration until you're, and I always think about how you're, if your art lacks your life, it's dead, right? Yeah. And I think about, and I think especially when you're young.
That quote, that was good.
I don't know. I'm sure someone else said that first. But I am so inspired by your natural interest in people and all these different things and how they in turn turn into real life content for your work.
Yeah.
And so many people, especially like people coming right out of school, get so ingrained, you know, the design, especially in design, maybe even less in illustration. I came from design, where they're just so into design. So in there, you know, all they know how to talk about is kerning. And you're like, but you can't design about kerning. Like, no. It has to have a heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like the work that speaks volumes and the work that, or pieces that designers or illustrators that have made that have withstood the test of time are those that you can see the authenticity through, like, they put their DNA into that work.
Yes.
There's some sort of flavor.
And life and people and, you know, human experience. Yeah.
Yep. And especially being in America, it's so multicultural that you cannot make esoteric work, in my opinion.
Right.
Because we're not an esoteric society.
Right.
So when I see stuff that is just like sans serif, I'm like, that's not us. That's not representative of like the people who use stuff. So like, I have a problem with that.
This is good. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it should be colorful.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? Just because I don't know if everybody picked up on the nuance of what you just said. Unpack it to whatever degree.
Unpack it is just like, we live, like, we don't live in these silos anymore. Mm. And we live in this like diverse country, if you love it or not, that the influences are, they cross-pollinate everything. Like, you know, I remember sitting in my room when my parents like left to go run an errand and turning on MTV and like seeing Dr. Dre and Ed Lover just talk about this, talk about hip hop, talk about that culture. I'm like, that is way more interesting than my own.
Yeah.
And I want that. And being young enough to understand, that's like way more interesting than the life that I'm living. So I think those things seep into your existence, and that is the fabric in which like we should pull inspiration from.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that then the work should be reflection of all those tiny things that we're exposed to in this beautiful country that I feel like some people try to strip away, because it's just like, we're going to try to get to the heart of just this essence, this intrinsic value of what we're trying to represent. It's like, but we're not that way, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we've got good history,
messier,
we've got bad history, and like, embrace it.
Mm-hmm.
Add some curves to it, add some volume. Don't be afraid to use fluorescent, vibrant colors, because that's the nature of like we exist.
Like, we're not in Switzerland right now.
Yeah.
Like in the 50s.
Exactly.
Yeah. No offense. I like modernism and all that. But I agree. There's, you know, you should be influenced by where you are now and what's happening.
You know, in my opinion, it's like homogenized culture. And therefore, that's why you get to that. That's how they got to that point.
Right.
And I have plenty of Swiss design books, and I value that aesthetic, but I don't think it is, it, when I see it outside, if someone's trying to do it here, I'm like, that's cool, but I don't think it's actually speaking
Where's
to
your
how you're living.
You and I like that. Yeah, totally. So, all right, we'll go back to, you're going to New York.
Yeah.
And what happens when you get there?
So, man, New York is so fast paced. You come with like all the confidence in the world being from California. It's like, yeah, I just came from this gallery space in San Jose, California, and met all these artists, and it was such an inspiring time. Then you get surrounded by like everyone who's just as talented as those people you're painting
like their walls for.
And you have to level up as fast as the sun rises the next day. And I found myself,
getting thrown in the deep end is not the worst.
No, but I found myself, I got an internship at Lander Associates. Sarah Williams, who's now a partner at Beerwood & Co., she, for some whatever reason, my portfolio box looked like something out of Lord of the Rings. And it was like, I had printed everything on my inkjet printer and like Super 77'd it and attached it to this Masonite that I milled down. The portfolio box weighed literally like 25 pounds. And I remember like sitting in there like during my interview, and I could just see they're like, okay, like there's something here. But it was really Sarah who like, she just saw something in me. And she gave me a chance. And then she opened the door for the rest of it. And every time I see her, because we're...
And Landor's pretty big. It's like a pretty big...
Yeah, you know, like at that time, like Landor was it. And it still is. They produce amazing work. But this was like, BP's done bad stuff. But when they made that logo, like to me, that was like aspirational.
I love that
logo. Wow. Yeah, like you can take something like in that industry and make it colorful. That's a different podcast.
Yeah.
Anyways. So I found myself there, and then I was surrounded by people who were just like beyond talented in all facets of life. And I recognized that I needed to level up, like I said, very, very quickly. So what I had started doing is taking on any project, because they have a culture, if you come in as an intern, you're not like exactoing presentation boards. They throw you into the mix. Like, okay, we're doing an identity work for this pro bono project. You guys go off for 2 days and make this all these assets and applications for it. And so we were doing what the art directors, creative directors, senior designers were doing.
Yeah.
It was awesome. We got to present it. If something was picked, we would actually get to go to meetings and present it. Beautiful thing. And I think all design studios should do that.
Yeah.
Because we have to keep this tradition alive. And the only way by doing it is letting junior people see how you... like say like people who are in senior leadership present, and then also give them a chance to experience it themselves.
Yeah. What did you learn in that phase that is still in play now? Do you still feel like presentation?
It was the, you're going to get briefed, and that, you know, that the client is always going to, they think they want this thing.
Yeah.
But what they want is something slightly, like if you look at a linear, if you look at this kind of like line, the middle is the like moderate kind of middle ground. If you go left is, I would consider more conservative. And then if you go right, that's like far out.
Mm-hmm.
So where they probably want to be is probably more conservative in their opinion, because they probably see what other companies are doing that are doing better. Like, oh, that's why we got to rebrand ourselves.
Yeah.
So I understand that there's the psychology behind getting clients on board and like selling them in this direction you want.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this pacing that you have to show these options. You have to show them what they ask for, but then you also have to show something that's super conservative, have to show something that's like a little bit far out, and then something that's super far out. So eventually where you can get them is somewhere that's between moderate and far out.
Yeah, that's good.
Where they should be.
It's a good trick.
And then showing them the process of how you got there, educating them why you think this is good. I found they did a lot of strategy work there, and I found value in it, because you have to speak to it, because not all people are creative. We all want to be, because I think being a creative, people are just naturally intimidated because it's this like primal thing that we all want to be artists, but at some point we have to commit to actually making money because we live in a capitalist society.
So
being able to get people to believe in your ideas, and that's what I think strategy helps, and I learned that at Landor. And I still apply that to everything.
So that's really good. So how long were you there?
How long was I there? 1.5 years. Not long.
And then what'd you do?
I got poached to go to another place. Mm. So that's the thing. Like, an art director leaves and then takes his crew with him.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that happens everywhere.
How long were you in New York?
6 years.
6 years, right. And you were you working full-time the whole time you were there?
Yeah. Right. So I started out like a big branding studio and then worked my way to like a four-person design studio.
Boutique kind of thing. Yeah, right. Yeah.
And then that failed miserably, and then the economy collapsed, and then decided to head back home to California.
Right, yeah.
I moved to LA, spent 6 months there, watched Lost, because I was I feel like lost myself, literally. I was like, every time I had visited LA, it was this romantic place, and then I was like, oh my God, it's the most isolating place in the world coming from a place like New York.
Yeah, right.
Some people transition nicely into that new type of culture. I didn't. My wife didn't. Luckily, she got a job up in San Francisco that relocated us, that kind of paid for our mistake of moving to LA.
Right.
And at that point, when we did move to LA, I just wanted to freelance. I just didn't want to work for anyone. I didn't want to have to I didn't want to have to be at work at 9 a.m.
So were you already into lettering?
I yes and no. You know, it was that thing that I was always doing that I put a lot of effort into, but I never actually attributed to I can make a career out of this.
Yeah.
And even in school, lettering was a term that was never actually used. Mm-hmm. I heard calligraphy more than I heard type design, more than I heard lettering. So
how did you, what was your first encounter with lettering?
Lettering was doing a label for Diageo or something. Bacardi. Or you pick a typeface and you understand that everyone's using Mrs. Eves. So is there something that I can outline this typeface and modify it? Meaning make the S more eccentric to make it feel custom. Yeah. And in hindsight, you don't mess with type design, especially if it's well designed. They're perfect as it is. Because these guys
offensive or something.
Those people spend a lot of time making that stuff great.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I moved to San Francisco and I was doing freelance, had a terrible client meeting, and then just out of pure frustration, just lettered this thing that said thank you and fuck you. It was very juvenile. And
when was this?
This was 2009.
Okay. Not
No,
not
I was 29 years old. I've been through the system. And I did this thing, I sent it to Aaron Crambula, and then
he's the guy from Friends of Type.
Friends of Type. Yeah. And this was all over iChat, iMessage, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And this was at 6 p.m. or 3 p.m. West Coast time, which means it was 6 p.m. his time, and he was still in the East Coast. He's now on the West Coast. And he was just oh, you should post it somewhere, because this is when blogs were predominant.
Yeah.
And he was I was where? He's let's make something. And then the challenge was on. So we actually had archived this, the dialogue between us on iMessage.
Yeah.
And we came up with a name an hour later. I quickly designed this little logo for it. And then we started putting up content. The first thing that we posted was my thank you and fuck you.
Yeah.
So I have to probably call that client and say thank you for not being a nice person, because that is what sparked this thing.
Yeah.
And this new career for myself.
And again, I love that this is something from your life that sparks your creativity.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And then we recognized, because we looked at the Google Analytics, we're like, oh my God, 60 people have visited this site. This is amazing.
Which would be a lot now, because nobody goes to websites anymore.
No one cares. Yeah. They're all about Instagram or Snapchat. So then we just started loading it with content, because at that time, too, blogs all were aggregating other people's work.
They were looking for content.
From portfolio sites, and it was just Fufafound, which is going, they're defunct May 8th. This is sad.
That was a weird site.
Yeah.
Some dark corners.
Yeah. Dark but bright.
You guys get on there?
Yeah. I spent 3 hours on it the other night. Reminiscing, getting nostalgic.
I haven't been on there in years. Every once in a while, there'll be some kind of weird tangent that gets me on there.
So we've...
Don't do it. Bob says don't.
Yeah. We prided ourselves on like posting original content, and we made it a fact that
unlike all these curating blogs.
Yeah, there was no one doing original content. And then what was funny is like I think 5 days later, Jessica Hish started Daily Dropcap. So there's this like frequency in life where someone just everyone finds this new radio station, I guess.
Yes.
And they're like, I've been listening to this other terrible station forever, and like, what is this? And it like, oh, I like
it's like
the music
something
they're
in
playing.
The air.
Yeah.
And you catch it. Yeah. Different people catch it. Yeah.
So we all caught it kind of at the same time, and we just hustled. Like I hate that word, but we really did. Yeah. So every day we were posting
something.
You
knew. Yeah. We'd hit something.
We all knew, and then I just did everything in my effort to make it a priority. And I had a conversation with Dana, my wife, and I said, like, this is something I really want to do. Can you basically cover me?
Right.
So I said, I'll cover, like, rent and some other expenses, but, like, I just want to spend time developing work. Mm. And so for 2 years, day and night, you know, I do a little trickle of freelance projects, but day and night I was just making work. And it was this, like, beautiful moment. It was probably how I imagined what college should have been, but it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
But I only experienced
it. I had really similar things.
When I was, like, 29, 30.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, right now, I feel like creativity, like you're 29, 30, you're like, oh, you're fucking old. But I also look at the people that I'm totally inspired by are people that were making their best work in their 50s, 60s, and 70s.
True.
And I want to be 80, and I want to be doing this, and I want to be able to look at the work and being like, I'm making it the best I can do today.
Yeah, me too. Go ahead, what are you saying?
No, I was just like, I'm sure you guys feel the same. You know? It only gets better.
It's a long play.
I always think about that with Paul McCartney. It's like I don't dislike what he makes now, but I always think, is the fire there? I just want to have a conversation with him.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah, is he just like, oh, I got to pay for that third house in Monaco.
Yeah. Like that,
I always think that like, oh, Hall & Oates are touring again. That must mean that, like they need to pay off a new house.
What about that moment was not luck?
The moment of like Friends of Typestar?
Yeah, just all that stuff. What was there anything that anybody could extrapolate and learn from? I mean, there's a bunch of things. How did you have the intuition to feel like, what gave you the notion like there's something here? And how did you have the guts to do a leap? And like, what were the things that?
I do think like I have a tendency not to share my work. And I understood that I was working with Aaron, Jason, and Dennis for so long, there was this comfortability that they would never judge me if something was like inadequate. Mm. I might think of it as inadequate, but they would see it like, wow, that's something that I know I can't do and I appreciate because there's something within this that is unique.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I reached out to Aaron, and I also knew I had always admired Aaron because he was always like 5 years ahead of us with technology, like everyone I knew.
Right.
And he was just naturally like loved it, loved everything that was happening with like new computers that were coming out or whatever you name it, he had it. So I also knew like, man, like Aaron was the person, if this was going to happen outside of like him also loving lettering, that this might be the person like to help make this thing into something.
Yeah.
But I think it's because none of it was contrived. It was all this like
natural.
I was just sharing it to share it. Wanted to see like, it was more of a therapy session. Like, man, I had a really bad day. I did this thing and like, here's just look at it for me and just be nice. And he's like, yeah, it's awesome. And then yeah, he's the one who's just like, we're gonna make a website.
Yeah.
We're gonna make a blog. Like, in 3 hours, you know? and then it was just like the planets aligned. It's like, I don't know how to, but the thing is like, you have to put yourself out there. You have to have the conversations with those random people that there's just going to be this moment in history where it just strikes.
Yeah.
It could be when you're 60. It could be when you're 14. Mm-hmm. But at some moment, if you just are pursuing it and have that perseverance, like I understand that it will happen for everybody.
Yep.
Just
thinking when. And it looks like if you're going back, everything that led you to be friends with Aaron, there's all these like next right things that actually didn't probably, I don't know if they seemed cosmic at the time, but they all came together into that moment.
In that moment. And then like, you know, Aaron and I were going to just run it at like Friends of Type as ourselves, but then we're like, ooh, we want to generate a post a day. That we then reached out to Jason and Dennis, who we knew that they loved type, calligraphy, and lettering just as much as us, if not more so, that they seemed like the only people that would be appropriate to like have a part of the crew.
Yeah.
So, and right. we're all into like things that people had crew. We're all like into skateboarding, so we're like the Palo Peralta crew, and like it was just this like common theme, you know, like the greater sound, you know, like collaborating, you can only make better work.
Right. So, yeah. Okay, so fast forward to now. One question I wanted to see if you had an answer for, it's kind of a weird one, is what response is your favorite response to work that you've done?
Oh, the like, man, you have the variety, and like, you know, Bob and his company that graciously invited me to do this workshop.
Yeah.
He gave this nice introduction before we kind of started the workshop. It was just like, I mean, maybe I don't want to paraphrase it because I'm really bad at paraphrasing it. So if you want to jump it,
Bob,
maybe,
tell us.
Can you tell us?
I don't. That was like 12 hours ago.
Yeah, that was
longer.
5 months ago.
No, I think what always strikes me about your work and what really drew me to you in the beginning, and as someone I looked up to when I first started lettering, and still to this day, is like kind of the breadth and versatility in this. There's so much style in your work, but there is no like one style in what you do. And that like that's super rare in today's kind of world. People, you know, it's like you have to have your kind of niche, and like this is what that person does, and you're so far from that, and it's all like always respected.
I'll be honest with you. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'll be honest. So I work with a lot of creative people, and I will see a lot of people just trying to be amazing number one, and I'm like, there's only one Michael Jordan. Like, you can't, like, he was a he was the Michael Jordan of basketball.
Yeah,
be more like the Michael Jordan of rebounds. You could be Dennis Rodman. But I always say, because especially if they're in lettering, I'm like, we've already got Eric Marinovich, the Michael Jordan of lettering. But I do think that you have this crazy ability to tackle all these different things, and I wonder if, from your perspective, if there is a thread, maybe it's not aesthetic, but if there's a thread that runs through all of your work.
That is a good question.
Yeah, and I'm always kind of curious about that from your perspective.
Really,
if there's, are there things that you feel like you're bringing to the table every time, even if they're not aesthetic?
Insecurity. It's the insecurity.
Secret.
I know. It is the secret sauce, because when you work for yourself, you have this sensation of maybe tomorrow no one will like your work.
Yeah.
And I should probably go to a therapist and talk to him about this, but I don't. Dr. Miller. But I think that is like the drive, because everything that I make, I feel like it could potentially be the last thing I make. And if I fucking die tomorrow, because mortality is a thing that we should all
think about,
that I want to know that last thing that I touched with the pencil that I put to paper, or the software that I used to create something, is the best thing that I could have done that day.
Yeah.
So I always get gripe of like, man, my process is so slow. I like meander on making decisions, but we live in this current time where everything is expedited. So if you open up Instagram and you follow 10 people, you'll see that those 10 people are on the other side of the world doing these awesome things, that enters into your bloodstream and into your consciousness, where you feel this like, if I'm not making something every day, then I'm not a part of the fast pace of this rapid stream we are all in creativity. And I was a part of that for a while before Instagram came around, because that's just something I gravitated to by doing Friends of Type, because I knew time was of the essence and I wanted to create the body of work, and I knew that I had a limited amount of time before I probably had to find a real job and actually start contributing to paying bills. So it was that insecurity that then led me to, again, making things, like, everything I make is just, like, if something happened to me tomorrow, I'll be, like,
and totally content. That's today, even.
I could die on the plane home tomorrow. Yeah. Like, but I'd be okay because I came here, got to hang out with Bob, got to hang out with Sean, got to hang out with you, be inspired by a conversation that I wouldn't have had back home.
Yeah.
And that's something that I'll just, like, carry with me for the rest of my life, which is awesome. And that's something that we always forget. Like, we have these great conversations, and then something else comes up, and we're like, just wash it away. I always want to keep these nuggets with me. So, like, I have a bad time. I'm like, but remember that time we were hanging out in Indianapolis? That was so good.
That was a good
and we'll
time.
Be, next time we meet up, it might be 80 years old, we'll have this moment to share.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
So insecurity, yeah, that's the thing. Insecurity and just making something, and that sounds like so fucking cliche, but it's like true.
Yeah.
It is really true, so.
What do you love about lettering?
Billions and billions and billions and billions of microcosmic options. So they're
for, I never saw that answer coming. So that's fantastic.
They're for everything, for every letter form. You can never draw the same thing twice.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Right.
Maybe that's
there's an infinite amount of ways of interpreting these things.
Maybe that's a type designer approach where, you know, they might view something as more systematic and that it has to fit into this, like, you know, there has to be this correlation of, like, contrast and color and weight and serif, sans serif. But what I love about lettering, and this, I shouldn't say that about type design because those, everyone who does type design are prolific.
Mm.
So maybe we should just cut that out. But lettering, on a daily basis, like either while I'm walking or I'm watching a television show, there's like something new that I'm seeing that I didn't see the day before, and that triggers something in my mind where like, hey man, maybe you should try that out.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe that would be the thing that you're gonna like love to do forever.
Right.
Unfortunately, 7 or 8 years in, I haven't found that, and
yeah,
and that's okay, and I've accepted it.
It's part of what you do, for sure.
Yeah, and, you know, I follow, like, the contemporaries that I love. They found something, and they found it early, and I'm so jealous, but I'm also so happy that they found this rhythm and frequency that they love doing and that people respond well to, and then that's something that they can do, and for each new thing that they do, it still feels fresh, it still feels contemporary. I do hope that I can find this moment where I'll find a niche and just carry that with me, but
you still have that?
Oh yeah,
that's wild.
Yeah, but I was talking with Bob earlier, and this was an interview that Charlie Rose had done with David Bowie a long time ago.
Yeah,
and recently I think Pentagram worked on redesigning Charlie Rose's identity, and that they put all of his interviews online.
What?
It
I didn't know that.
Awesome.
That's cool.
So he had done this one with David Bowie, and he asked them this question of, like, you know, if you look at your portfolio of work, it's all over the place, either from each album you do to then wanting to publish, be a publisher, or start an internet company, or start being a painter. Mm. And his response is, like, I have no loyalty to style. And hearing someone like, someone who I've admired forever.
Yeah.
David Bowie say something like that and say it with such confidence was like, damn.
Yeah.
Okay.
Milton Glaser said something similar too. So you got that.
Maybe
well.
He saw David Bowie say
maybe
it.
Maybe
I didn't see David Bowie. Now I'm saying that. So that's kind of now, it was reassuring to hear someone say something like that. Not that I needed to hear David Bowie say that, but it was just like confirmation that he has those struggles and has the confidence like, I do whatever I'm interested in and then I pursue it.
Yep. And I think, I don't know, but I imagine from an art director's point of view, they can call on you when they need something done that they haven't seen somebody do, but you know that you can deliver precision and something that looks great. I think that that's the thing that you see across all of your pieces is that there's just precision, it's lots of different mediums and just, I always tell all the creatives I work with, they've got to be able to trust something. What can they trust? They don't have to, if they can't trust your style, you can give them other things to trust. And I feel like you, whatever thing you're using, whatever tool, it always is going to look polished. It's always going to look considered. It's always going to be slick. And so I imagine, you know, when Random Brand has an idea that they don't know exactly how to execute, or it doesn't follow some kind of style that's already pre-existing or somebody else's, they can turn to you.
And I understand, like, you know, what we do is commercial art. So, like, clients come to me because they have a problem. They see something in my work that they think might help solve the problem. So I will do the best of my ability to kind of answer it the way that I think it should be answered.
Yep.
But I think that's why the variety comes into play, is because if you stuck to one thing, then you limit your palette.
Mm-hmm.
But then that's why I carve out time in my calendar year. I understand now that, like, around the holidays, post Thanksgiving, things just slow down.
Maybe
it's because people have out, they've spent all their money.
This is wisdom, by the way.
Yeah, they spent all their money, and no new projects are coming in. And if there are projects, it's just because, like, there's some fire drill and something didn't work.
Yeah.
And you basically have 0 hours to make a huge campaign.
Working on Christmas.
And don't do it.
Don't do it.
Yeah. Because it's not worth it.
It's a bad
and the work
situation.
Won't be good.
Listen to this. If you're new in the game, this is good.
Because it's just, it's like, oh, like, let's drive through this forest fire. We'll be fine. So I utilize that time when, like, things slow down to just focus on making personal work. And I know that everyone and their mother has gone on a conference stage and then written Medium posts about the importance of personal work. But as a freelancer, it's the thing that then you put out into the world that art directors, if it's ad agencies or design studios, they're looking for something new.
New. That they can co-opt, basically.
Mm,
not,
yeah.
And, you know, that's great. In most ways.
They are like the researchers and the developers that see something that's good and are able and have the wisdom to basically see that that would be very good to solve this solution for this thing that we're
good doing. Connectors. And it's so much easier for them to go into a meeting with Coke and say, look at this. Do you want your campaign to look at that? Look like that?
Yeah.
And it doesn't. And because it's not attached to another brand, they're not going to feel like, well, Pepsi did that or whatever. Yeah. You're like, well, it's just this artist guy. He's real creative, making stuff.
Yeah. You know? And so I think that is the symbiotic relationship that you have to understand. It's like you're a farmer, and, like, if you're not in the marketplace and realizing that, like, we have friends that live in the Central Valley in California, and, like, it was all about raisins. And so every single farmer planted raisins. But then trends changed, and all of a sudden, like, people started wanting to eat figs.
Yeah.
So everyone then ripped out their raisin, their grapes, and started planting pomegranates.
Yeah.
And I mean, figs, and then it became pomegranates. And now it's almonds. This is weird, but it's very true. So as a creative and as a freelancer, you have to understand that trends and aesthetics change.
Yeah.
So you have to be wise and just, like, buy a new field to fucking plant a new different type of fruit.
Gold.
You're a farmer.
Yes.
And you always have to plant new seeds, and you have to tend to the land.
You know what's a tricky thing, and I wonder, I don't know exactly how you navigate this. When it's quiet, sometimes that's when people feel overwhelmed by dread and panic.
Yeah.
And then it's hard for them to make work in that place.
Yep.
How do you stay the course and just systematically be like, all right, there's no jobs or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep my head down and do what I got to do. Got to plant the seeds when, you know, that there's no crops.
To be 100% transparent, like, the last couple of months have been tremendously slow.
Yeah.
And I've reached out to a lot of friends of just, like, hey, man, like, the feelers. Like,
how
you guys doing? You know, not with saying directly how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
And everyone came back after poking them enough with questions. It's like, yeah, man, it's slow.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if there's this, again, there's this something in the air. Maybe it's political, where there's this, like, state of uncertainty where clients are kind of, like, holding onto their money.
Uh-huh.
And they don't want to necessarily do new ad campaigns. That I got really nervous because as you are a parent and you have a children, your overhead goes from, like, zero to, like, 1,000 overnight.
Yep.
So I have to make sure that I'm maintaining this, like, you know, I have to make money.
Yeah.
So that insecurity then, like, I always have some idea in my head that I'm trying to, like, do the next, like, an idea that comes into play that I will, like, this is my next side project. the last like 6 months I haven't been inspired. And I don't know, again, it's because of the political thing and just reading too much.
A lot of
people
are in this zone. Yeah.
But then what happened was like I got sparked by like, man, I live in San Francisco. I'm surrounded by these prolific, talented creatives that if they decided to be freelance on their own, they could kill it. But they have the golden handcuffs because they have, they're working for companies that are paying them awesome.
Yeah.
And they are smart to be working at those companies because they're setting themselves up for a great future for themselves and their family. I'm dumb and I don't, I don't care because it's, I don't want to live that life. I want to be, I want to be a creative.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can be a creative there. I understand. But I want to be a creative in a way that I'm showing work that I'm controlling my destiny.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if it fails miserably, that was my own decision. That was my own making. So I sparked this idea of like, what if there's a thing of like, there was that time in history where it was all about lettering and it was all about advertising. So if you looked at like the Sanford, I imagined backtrack to like the 50s and it's like the San Francisco Chronicle where the paper was just like ads on ads on ads, but it was just like new and exciting, like sponges and nuts and bolts, but then it was like beautiful commercial art and commercial lettering. And then I thought like, well, let's reinterpret it with my frustrations of living in an expensive city and being this freelancer in a community where like everyone else is making more money than you and like maybe surviving, I assume surviving better than me.
Yeah.
So like it's all these like special bad credit offer or like big sale, only $23,000 a month, you know, that type of, and you know, it's like, it's cynical, but that's the state I am living in.
And that's how your whole lettering thing started.
Back to my
roots. Being true to your thing. Yeah, where you're at.
Yeah.
Inspired by your moment.
So I want to make this book and just do these like these pieces where they're just like they herald back to this era of like commercial lettering from the 50s. Mm-hmm. But instead of saying like, try this new like baking soda, it's awesome. It's just like something real. It's just like that Louis C.K. like everything's amazing, but nobody's happy.
True. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I feel like that's kind of just how things are, and I know it all passes, but you only do good work by recognizing like the moment you're living in.
Mm-hmm. So. Oh man, that's so good. We're gonna wrap up really soon. We've been talking for 3 hours, I think.
Yeah.
I had one other question. Oh, you've done tons of stuff, murals. Everything. Is there anything that you haven't done that you want to do?
Yeah, lots of it.
Is there a thing? Is there like, I want to do a bucket list. Like, what's the thing that you want to make that you haven't?
Movie titles.
I hope that someone is listening to this and sees how ridiculous it is that Eric has not done movie titles.
I did this like.
That would be amazing.
God.
Dude. Come on.
I did this thing for like FX for that show Atlanta.
Okay.
And I was so excited because like here's the pilot and I like watched it and I was like enamored by just how amazing that pilot was.
Yeah.
Donald Glover is just the man.
Yeah.
And I've never been so inspired by this 30 minutes of visual dialogue and everything about culture that I love. So anyways, I did this pitch and I just like put my heart into it and I like watched, the show was playing on repeat in the background while I just spent 3 days. I should have like done a day, but I extended it out as much as I could. And then I finished it and of course it didn't get picked. And then like a couple months later, I realized like my buddy Adam Garcia had worked on the pitch.
Yeah.
A buddy of mine in France, Tirsa, he had worked on it as well. And I was like, oh my God. I thought you loved me, you know? But those are the moments that are very humbling. And when you know that your contemporaries that you admire because of their talent and just how smart the work
Adam's
that
they're so good.
I know. Has he done a podcast?
No, but he definitely should.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
He's beyond talented and he's articulate in ways that many are not. Yeah. So
people
I want to do that.
Say, he's a thinker.
I would love to do that. And I think I also want to do more in community engagement. Now having children, I'm like, man, we are just like wasting away. We're like killing the environment. But I think you can't just go shoot for the moon where you're like, everyone has to recycle. No, not yet.
Okay. I went to Disney World and I try to be not an intense person, but I'm looking at all the trinkets and I'm like, why do you think the world is ending? Yeah. Look at all this crap.
Yeah.
Anyway,
like, that's made from petroleum.
Yeah.
But this is stuff that didn't come into play until recently. And like, I'm contributing to that as being like, commercial lettering artist that I understand that in order to like, I need to give back. So I recently started donating money to replant trees.
That's cool.
So every quarter I give back to a couple.
Should make all this print?
Yeah. I'm literally cutting down trees, and I want to make sure that if my son becomes a lettering artist, there's like trees to make pulp from to make paper.
This is nice. I like that. That's awesome.
But I think I want to somehow figure out to make some sort of like self-initiated campaign in San Francisco. Just like, hey man, like you live in this beautiful place. You might have problems with it, but let's try and like be considerate of like not just like throwing something in the street.
Yeah.
And think that someone else is gonna pick it up for you, because that's not the state that we live in. And I would love to somehow figure out something that is smart in a way that people actually would not look at their smartphone to actually look at, and then maybe reconsider like, yeah, maybe I should recycle those batteries that I throw in the trash. Yeah. So that's important to me now.
That's awesome. What kind of pizza do you eat?
Everything.
We had. Me too. I don't discriminate.
We were in Indianapolis and we had
The Basbos. Twice.
Good pizza.
It is.
You had Basbos too when you were here.
Quattro Formaggio. It's the jam.
So can we say we're Fuse Session alumni?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because that's what brought us here.
That's right. Yeah. I'm from Indiana too.
Yeah.
30 minutes.
He's a Hoosier.
But Bob is an amazing connector.
Bob's a good man. I don't know Sean. It seems good.
I might be.
He's good.
Yeah.
I'll give you an update.
He stayed at our house last night, and we invited him back to stay again this night. So we didn't get murdered.
Fantastic.
Tonight.
Yeah.
So all's good.
See how it goes tonight. All right. Yeah. Awesome, dude. Thank you.
Should we do a? No one can see. We're doing
handshake. It's official.
I have one final question.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Frilly toothpicks?
I'm for them.
It's a club then.
Let's start a club.
Frilly toothpicks. What's that?
It's Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah.
Oh, he's like his best line. Really quick was like, I don't get why people stand out handing flyers, because it's like, here, throw this away from me. I love that line.
Dude, I love that. I was thinking about
that. There's so many good lines. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. R.I.P. Mitch.
All right. Thank you. Thank you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's so awesome. So Eric did this interview after a really long day, doing a full day workshop and late at night. And I just want to say a massive thank you to Eric to being on the show and doing that. Dude, I just want to pour out. I want to communicate my feelings about how deeply I appreciate your time and how much of an inspiration you are to me, man. Thank you so much for being so generous with your time and energy. I can't wait to go visit you in San Fran again sometime. Go check out Eric Marinovich's work. You will not be disappointed. Go follow him on Instagram. His work is gorgeous. Thanks, man. Really, really appreciate it. You are the best. All right. So, guys, thanks for everything. Thanks for all the love and support and listening to the show and blah, 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 blah. Thank you, is what I'm trying to say. Thanks to Yoni Wolf and the band Y. Y is one of my all-time favorite bands, if you didn't know. And they provide the theme song, the beginning song and the end song, which just is a dream come true for me. So thank you to them. Go check them out. They have a new album called Mo Lean, and it's gorgeous. Go check that out. I guess gorgeous is the word of the day. Thanks to Metavari for all the other tunes.
That's my buddy, Nate Utesh. He is just another sweetheart. I love Nate. He is such a good dude, and his music is so gorgeous. thanks for all the tunes from his band, Metavari. You can listen to them at soundcloud.com/Metavari or on Spotify and whatever music is proliferated. Thanks, Nate. Thanks for listening, guys. Thanks for spreading the pep and all the love and support. Couldn't do it without you guys. And do whatever it takes to stay pepped up.